Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I'm Ben.
Ben, we're back with another car culture episode.
Yes, and this is going to be, quite possibly, Scott, one of the last episodes we record in our current office.
Oh, that's true. That's right. We're making a big move soon.
Mm-hmm. We are moving on up, or in our case, moving on south, out of Buckhead to the Ponce City Market. Now, those of you who have listened to How Stuff Works shows or to our show for a while now know that we have historically been located in Buckhead.
Mm-hmm.
Years.
That's right.
And years.
And on a few different floors and a few different spaces on those floors, but we are making hopefully a permanent move downtown Atlanta.
Yeah, to a real fancy pants place, Scott. We're going to be up there with the swells.
Yeah.
Our super producer, Noel Brown, and I went down a while back to check out the space and figure out some stuff we would put together. And I got to tell you, man, it's going to take like 10 minutes just from parking to get to the office. That place is huge.
It is a big, big building. If you want to take a look at it online, it's easy to search. Ponce City Market in downtown Atlanta. You can see kind of where we're headed. It's an old Sears building. It's one of those giant old brick I don't know if it was a retail or distribution building.
Yeah,
I think it was a little of both, really. It's an enormous building.
Because the train tracks ran right through it.
Yeah, and there was a Ford building right next door.
Yep.
And I believe there's even a bridge that connects the two buildings.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this massive, massive building. So it should be pretty exciting. We may have a different sound. Who knows? It might sound a little different.
Right.
I don't know if it will or not. But we're going to have an all-new studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a couple of studios, really, to work from. So it's going to be a different thing for us, but I'm excited to see the new space. I have not yet.
Yeah, we're going to post some pictures when we get in there, and we'll also probably, if we can, take a trip out to where the train rails are, because I think that stuff will be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But for our last few podcasts here in our old space, we wanted to start off with a bang. We wanted to end with a bang. And do some stuff that's a little bit different. We hope you enjoyed our earlier podcast on the Southern Swedish culture.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Regare.
Yeah. Regare. Yeah, that's right. That was a fun one to do, and hopefully this one will be fun as well. And one thing I want to point out when we're talking about these different car cultures and these car culture podcasts is that we don't want to paint this entire group with one broad brush. I guess we don't want to say that everyone does this and no one does that. We don't want to say that everybody in the group conforms to this style or this norm when they don't. Some people just like the style of it and they don't have all the other trappings that are associated with it. And that, well, you'll understand as we get into this that, the guys we're going to talk about today, some are good, some are bad.
The Bosozoku, which I'm probably butchering, Bosozoku.
Mm-hmm.
This is a, it started, I think, more as a biking culture.
Yeah.
In Japan. And for a while, these were like the dangerous guys.
Well, let me break down the name for you.
Ah, yes.
The Boso part, B-O-S-O, stands for violently running.
Mm-hmm.
And the Zoku part, Z-O-K-U, it can't really be translated exactly, but it indicates gang involvement or relating to a gang.
Right. So this is like violent street gang.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So you get an idea of who we're talking about here. But I will tell you that there are adaptations of this. As we get to the end of this podcast, you'll find out that some of these people aren't necessarily involved in the gang. And there's a Boso style that goes along with motorcycles, cars, dress, all that stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
But with no gang involvement. So we're going to talk a little bit about both, but I think we should start at the beginning because this is something that originated in Japan around the 1950s, mid-1950s, so post-World War II. The term Bosozoku that we're talking about today didn't really come around until about the 1970s because they were just trying to find a way to describe the way this group of people were behaving on the streets.
Right. They were trying to find the categories. Now, when you picture post-World War II American teenagers, like the bad kids, I think most people, whether in the States or abroad, understand the image, right? We're talking pompadours, right? Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the leather jackets, greaser attire.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Greasers from the American culture in the 1950s are what kind of they imported this over into Japan at the same time. They were fond of this type of culture, just as we heard with the Rigari. Remember, mm-hmm. they said that that's kind of like the greaser culture in Sweden. This is sort of like the hanging on of the greaser culture in Japan.
And there's a really interesting thing that happens here because there's a motorcycle blog, Honda 404, that has a great look at Bosuzoku, the beginning of it, rather. And they specifically talk about returning veterans from the war and kamikaze pilots.
Yes.
And you know where we're going with this because they say that a new social problem arose. These people, having lived under the rule of war, right, had in some cases an assumption that they would never come home, Scott. And then they're home and they have PTSD and they have the other the stress problems, the emotional mental problems, and the physical ailments that are unfortunately so common in returning veterans. And some of them had a lot of difficulty adjusting to peaceful post-war life.
Oh, that's perfect, Ben. You're bringing those up in the exact right way because what I've read about this, in another article, in an article from Jalopnik,
mm-hmm.
and the article in Jalopnik, if you want to look at it, it's called The Bosuzoku or Japan's Disappearing Rebels Without a Cause. That's what mm-hmm. it's called. So we'll get to that in just a second. But the way that they describe this returning veterans thing, you know, you mentioned the PTSD having difficulty, but what I found most unique or strange about this whole thing was that some of these were returning kamikaze pilots that never went on a mission.
Yeah.
So these are guys that were, you know, completely dedicated to the cause for, you know, to thinking that they were never ever going to come back, as you said. And here they are back and they're wondering, well, why am I even here? What's the point of this? You know, and they lack the excitement that they had of, you know, any moment I could be called up to go out and fly this kamikaze mission for my country. So they have this incredible, I don't know, what's the best way to say this? Maybe it's like ultra nationalism.
Yeah.
I think, that, you know, they're super proud of their country, but they're back and they feel a little bit misplaced.
Right. Yeah. I believe, does kamikaze mean divine wind? For anyone who isn't familiar with this, I think most people would be, but kamikaze missions were generally considered to be suicide missions.
Of course. Yeah. They were, you know, a one-way ticket for them, really.
Right. So imagine that you have spent months or maybe even years thinking one day I am going to get into this vehicle for my country and I'm not going to come back. And then you're back. You survive.
There's some fascinating history with the kamikazes. Yeah. And I wonder if maybe we could even do a podcast about that, about the planes that were used during World War II.
Yeah.
I mean, some fascinating stuff, and I know there's some really interesting stuff of how they prepared, you know, before they went off to war even, because these guys, this was maybe their last time on the mainland.
That's
so
true.
Interesting stuff going on there. And these Bosuzoku people, you know, this group, imagine those guys kind of mixed with the American greaser culture, then movies from America, like, you know, the Rebel Without a Cause movies from the mid-1950s and, you know, showing that type of rebelliousness that anti-establishment type mentality.
That's the perfect word, anti-establishment type. These guys start tuning cars, getting involved with a little bit of gang activity.
Mm-hmm.
And
Motorcycles,
more so than cars in the beginning, I think. Mm-hmm. And the term, as you said, Bosuzoku, appears in the 1970s because, and for some people who have certain, cultural assumptions about Japan, this might sound out of the blue, but actual riots broke out between the bikers and the police forces.
Yeah, violent riots. I mean, there were some really, really difficult fights going. A lot of bloodshed was happening with this. Now, and this caused a media frenzy at the time. I mean, people were saying, what is going on Japan's streets here? We're having a real, real difficult problem with these people. What, you know, we just now know what to call them. We're going to call them this Bosuzoku. We can't figure out why they're running wild like this. We can't figure out why they're smashing storefronts, why they're battling with other gang members on the streets. You know, because it's not just Bosuzoku battling the police. It's also them battling with other gangs.
Right. Yes. With, with other gangs, with police, and as you mentioned, robberies. These were often considered, the youth from these places were considered people from a lower class generally, mm-hmm. like from broken homes, from a low-income situation, and in a culture that is often portrayed as prizing a homogenous society, they really stuck out.
Yeah, you typically think of, you know, life in Japan, I guess. I mean, or at least at the time, was more peaceful. It was more sedate. It was more, in many cases, it was a rural life. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cities weren't what they are today by any means. They were big, but not as big as they are now. Not quite as crowded as they are now. I know that was always an issue, but you tend to think of it as more of a peaceful life, and they were having a very difficult time. They needed some kind of new excitement, and this mm-hmm. was it. This was the key.
Right. And to be fair to your earlier point about broad brush strokes, which I can't believe I managed to say on the first try, the gangs themselves don't necessarily see themselves as these crazy outlying criminals. They often, according to a Japanese photographer who spent some time following them around and taking photos for a photo essay, they often see themselves as more protectors of traditional Japanese values.
That's right. They argue their cultural value, I guess, in a completely different way from mm-hmm. the way everybody sees them, you know, on the outside. But that's not necessarily true. They kind of see themselves as samurai warriors, which is so strange. And mm-hmm. can I just add one more quick thing before
yeah.
we move on to the samurai issue? Because that's a completely different thing.
Right. Yeah.
I guess maybe we should back up to the 1980s, really. Because in the 1980s, that was called the golden age of Bosatsuku, right?
Oh, yeah. Membership was at its peak. Yeah,
that's right. And then a lot of the members, I guess you could say they graduated from Bosatsuku into a different life of crime. And it's a completely different life of crime, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because these members, they're typically, Bosatsuku, they're like 16 to 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the reason behind this is because licensing. They're able to drive
yeah.
scooters and motorbikes before they're able to generally drive a car. That's kind of the reason behind this
mm-hmm,
whole thing. So,
mm-hmm.
so the Bosatsuku members who are now above 20, they kind of graduate to this different level, which is, I'll try to pronounce this. I think it's Yakuza.
Ah, the Yakuza. Yeah. The interesting thing here is that this sort of evolution makes sense, or this graduation, as you call it, because, the Yakuza, the organized crime syndicates and families of Japan, also at times consider themselves a sort of descendant, a spiritual descendant of the samurai.
Ah, so from road gang to organized crime.
Yes.
That's the path. Now,
not everybody.
Well, not everybody does that. Once they come out of the Bosatsuku, sometimes, you know, they adjust a little better into, I guess what we'll call in finger quotes, normal life. Right? but some do move on to this organized crime, and that's kind of one way. And there's another thing. We'll talk about alumni in just a minute, but this is also strange, isn't it, Ben? All right, so back to the samurai thing.
Yes.
Now, samurai, I mean, it's a different type of samurai, though. I'm going to have to struggle with this pronunciation.
Right.
Unless you want to tackle it. I can try it. All right, samurai with Yamato Damashi.
You know, Scott, that probably wasn't perfect, but it was pretty good.
It's as close as I'm going to get today.
So I'm going to go with it as well. This is a term that doesn't really have a direct English translation, and the meaning of itself probably is difficult even to just paraphrase in a Western context, but it can mean something like the Japanese spirit or the Japanese soul.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So they see themselves as these roving warriors, you know, the way that these crews kind of cruise the streets and they just cause mayhem in their wake.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of the way they see themselves. So they see like they're still part of this unique Japanese tradition somehow. I mean, it's just a weird adaptation of that, I guess. I mean, they really do see themselves as warriors.
Yeah. And there's also this, this also goes into, I guess, some of the dress or it's almost fair to call it a uniform, but the styles of these different gangs. You'll see a lot of naval insignia, the Japanese imperial flag. You can also see uniform patches that have this. It's on bike helmets. It's on crew flags. They paint it on the motorcycles they use.
This is like the rising sun emblem, right?
From yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about during World War II, some of the imagery that was used then.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, these guys are wearing overalls or coveralls and things like that, right? And they were also wearing jackets, I believe, that the kamikaze wore. That was another military thing, right? Mm-hmm. They wear big round sunglasses. They wear headbands with, you know, with battle slogans painted on them. And of course, you said the pompadour hairstyles, which cracked me up. I don't know why that, I laughed.
That part did not come from the army.
No, it did not. That's still the greaser rocker type look, you know, but, it's just kind of something that's associated with it. There's even something called, this is weird, something called the punch perm, which is considered a common Bosuzuku hairstyle. And I don't know what a punch perm looks like even, but I'm going to have to look that up. But, strange.
Maybe just go to, next time go to a barber, just request a punch perm.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, the other thing is, you know, recently, they started wearing surgical masks on the street, which is so strange. But, you know, they think that maybe the idea is to conceal identities when they're on these big rides, these cruises, these raids.
I see.
So, you know, police officers or even security cameras catching them, you know, doing the deed, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. You know, these surgical masks help protect their identity.
And I don't know where Japanese law enforcement is with this, but facial recognition technology is a concern for criminals in a lot of countries. Not that all of these people are criminals.
I think I can tell you where the police kind of stand on this whole thing, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
So in this Jalopnik article, they interviewed or talked to the local police in Japan. I'm not sure what city they were in, but the police spokesman from wherever they were said that they have this different strategy because a lot of people will think that the police really aren't doing anything about these guys.
Right. You know,
they're just cruising behind them, just watching. But the idea here is they do have cameras in action at this point. So the police are following them. They're videotaping every single thing that these guys are doing. And, you know, if it gets out of hand, of course, they're going to step in. They're going to interact. But if it's just, if they're just causing a nuisance, if they're driving down the road, they're revving their engines like they like to do, you know, and they're kind of, you know, yelling and maybe throwing a few things here and there. They're generally going to let them go. If they really cause a disturbance, they're going to step in. But the idea is that they're taping them. They've got positive identities on a lot of these guys now.
Right. They have the positive ID for later.
And, so they step in later and make an arrest. But the public doesn't see that. The public sees them closely following behind them, just kind of observing what's going on. And they think, well, they're not doing anything because, you know, in the past, I guess, you know, there were a lot of times back in the 1980s, 1970s even, when the way it was that, you know, police would just kind of pull you over and give you maybe a reckless driving infraction or something like that. You know, something, a slap on the wrist, basically.
And say, get out of town.
Yeah, I mean, it was really nothing to really, you know, affect your driver's license at all or anything like that. But now, I guess there's a much stronger code of rules in place so that when they do arrest them for some of this stuff, it's extremely costly for them. The other thing is that it does negatively affect the driving record of that person. So, it's a different way of attacking the problem. And I think they found that it's much more effective.
Yes. And also this, I think, reflects some of the change, the sea change or paradigm shift that was going on in Bosuzoku culture. But before we talk a little bit more about the change, Scott, you want to talk about these bikes?
Yeah, these bikes. I mean, they're modified motorcycles or in some cases scooters these days because there's some pretty wild scooters out there.
Yeah, they don't look like your average scooter. They're super long.
No, definitely not. And completely custom. Very cool looking.
Absolutely.
I love some of those scooters. They're really pretty interesting.
Yeah, I feel like I'm looking at anime or something.
Yeah, it's bizarre. So some of these, but the motorcycles that were commonly associated with this type of culture are heavily modified. You know, they have oversized fairings like those that are found on cafe racers.
Right.
They have raised handlebars that are found like on a chopper.
Like so an American chopper
style. So it's
kind
of a mix up of styles there. They have, you know, a paint scheme like we talked about, you know, with the rising sun depicted on the gas tank maybe. That's pretty common, I think. And other, you know, national symbols, I guess.
Yeah. And then they've got their gang symbols as well.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most interesting things to me, and I think this will interest you and our listeners also, is that there are regional differences in the modifications.
Yeah, I think I read about one that was, I don't know if I can pronounce the name of this prefecture, but it's
Ibaraki.
Ibaraki. Very good, Ben. Thank
that's,
you.
Well, that's probably a butchering of the pronunciation.
Well, that's better than I could have done, Ben. I appreciate it. And so that is a prefecture that's located on the main island of Honshu. So I don't know how better to describe that, but you can look that up and find out where it is.
What do they have going on there?
They have a unique, colorful, and flashy way to customize their bikes.
Mm-hmm.
This is so strange. I'm just going to read it because it's so weird.
This is weird, yeah.
They often have 3 or 4 oversized fairings in a tower-like way on a motorcycle that are painted in bright yellow or pink with Christmas lights. Well, sort of like Christmas light adornments to them. So
yeah.
What I'm thinking are kind of like those Decatora trucks.
Uh-huh.
It's got to be similar to that look. And it's so weird to think that someone would do that to a motorcycle, but hey, why not?
Yeah, there's, okay, clearly bikers who are listening now, you know that if you look at these pictures, guys, you'll see it, and you'll know that this has a negative impact on the bike's performance.
Oh, of course it does. It's all about the style. It's all about the way it looks, right? Because these guys are more into cruising around town slowly, and apparently, from what we've read, causing a lot of ruckus. So they're, revving the engines. You were talking like midnight, driving through smaller streets, waking people up, throwing things.
Being rude.
Using makeshift weapons and things like that to, hit other drivers and other riders and, smack cars and break windows and stuff like that. They really do this stuff. Not all of them, as we said, but some do. And, so this is kind of their thing. They don't really care about outright speed. They're not like the cafe racers who are truly into,
just
customizing
their
bike. Yeah, exactly right. It's a completely different style.
And the idea though that their illegal activities normally took the form of public disturbance, while that was accurate, I think it's a little bit more of a past tense. Cause as we'll see later in this podcast, and as you'll see if you check out some of the articles, on Posesoku, there is speculation that their days are numbered.
Yes, they've been on the decline, and I'll tell you kind of what's going on. We mentioned that in the 1980s, that was kind of like the golden age of this, right? There were so many people involved in this, and I'll tell you that in 1982, I think the Japanese government estimated their numbers at something like 42,500 members. In all of Japan. Now, that's a lot of people involved in something like this because we're talking about biker gangs that are, as we, again, smashing stuff up and hitting other people with makeshift weapons.
Fighting with each other
constantly. Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of, the way these guys roll. But in 2011, so going back, from 1982 all the way through 2011, these numbers, they looked at the numbers and they decided that I think the gang membership has gone way, way down. So they kind of did a rough count here, I would suppose, is how they did it. I don't know how they would actually find out exactly how many members there are.
Yeah.
But the number has been greatly reduced anyway. So the Japanese National Police say that the membership in gangs has fallen to 9,064, which is the lowest number since the collection of data of the gangs began in 1975. So even in 1975, there were more than that.
Right, yeah. So from 42,000 to under 10,000.
Exactly right. So closer to 9,000. So it's down very, very low. Now, the total number of gangs, these different groups that get together.
Yeah.
The total number of gangs nationwide is now at 507. That's down 76 from just 2009. So we're talking just, 4 or 5 years ago at this point, or 5 or 6 years ago.
Right.
And in the Tokyo area alone, this is crazy. Most of them appear to be in the Tokyo area because the number of members in the Tokyo area has fallen from 5,300 in 1980 to just 119 members in 2012.
Wow.
Oh, you know what, Ben? That's not the number of members. That's the number. This is incredible. This is the number of gangs in the Tokyo area.
119
gangs in the Tokyo area. There were 5,300 gangs in Tokyo back in 1980.
Wow.
I was thinking that was individual numbers because that seems like a high number.
It's so big. But of course, a gang size can vary widely.
Yeah, it could be 2 people.
Yeah. That's our gang.
I don't think there's really a strict, definition of what a Bosuzuku gang has to be, right?
Right. And there are also quite a few things that could be sticky about this study. How many people self-identify? Yeah. How do they identify this? But the point is, regardless of how you look at it and what kind of grains of salt you take with a study like this, there's no question about it that the Bosozoku culture is in decline, at least in terms of numbers.
Yeah, and some people are even thinking that I think I've seen estimates or guesses that in about 10 to 20 years, this may just kind of fade into the distance. It may be gone because there's another group that they may join.
It
might become bigger.
Yeah, not the organized criminal rings. So people trace the decline of Bosoosoku participation to two big reasons. And one of these is kind of counterintuitive. It's the worsening or weakening of the Japanese economy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at first, when you hear that, you might say, Scott, Ben, no, that doesn't make any sense, because doesn't criminal activity tend to increase in times of in hard economic times?
Well, yeah, you would think so. People would be kind of, you know, hard up for cash or whatever.
Sure.
And they would be thinking like, well, if I just go knock over this this convenience store,
yeah,
get a few bucks in my pocket and I can, you know, afford another tank of gas.
Yeah. People are more likely to go on a hustle in times of hardship. But instead, what they found is that these crews, the crew members who, again, remember, often came from lower income families. These guys already were having problems with buying a bike, which is expensive, and modifying a bike, which is even more expensive. And the uniforms of the Bosoosoku are pretty expensive themselves, because you have to get things embroidered. And now they've pointed out that the newer recruits are going to street clothes and scooters.
But now, don't you find this kind of funny? That, you know, these hardened street criminals are finding it difficult to get things embroidered. So it's really cutting into their gang style. I don't know why I find that funny, but I do. It's like,
I see.
I can't get my jumpsuit embroidered with the rising flag on the back. So I'm just not even going to go out tonight. I'm not even going to do it.
Well, yeah. And also, if you think about the military basis of it, an emphasis on uniform is not surprising.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
And it would be worse to get it wrong.
And the thing is, you don't want to go out there with a non-modified bike if you're going to cruise with the Bosoosoku, right?
Yeah.
No, I mean, and that's expensive. To modify a bike, that's even more expensive probably than, you know, buying the other, the clothing stuff, right?
Right. And the second reason that we talked about, I think we've already really addressed this, is the National Police Agency's increasing eye, right? Their increase in observation. I want to add something a little bit. I want to add something else here. Another reason, a third reason. I think it's the aging.
You think so?
Yeah. Well, what we've seen in so many car culture studies is that the population begins to decline when it is kind of age-based. And what can happen is that the older guard starts going in a different direction, or they age out of it, and younger people, new recruits, don't step in at the same numbers, because so many of these cultures happen in one moment in time.
Mm-hmm. So, like, when you're saying that they've stepped into the Yakuza, the organized crime group, mm-hmm. or, you know, they finally get out of this, and then they kind of lead a typical or normal adult life, and then they decide to come back in these alumni groups.
Mm-hmm.
And these alumni groups, there's a different name for them, and they're the, here's another one, Ben.
I'll try this one.
Okay.
The Kushakai.
Okay, done. I'm not gonna even say it.
Oh, wait, I got it wrong. Kayushakai.
Okay,
oh,
fine.
It's even worse.
I'll buy it. That's probably the right way.
But, so who are these guys?
These are the adult members that have come back that are, you know, a little too old for the Bosoosoku type, but these are the ones that they kind of maintain their traditional style and some of the other traditions, but maybe they're not so rough around the edges. You know, maybe they're a little more sedate.
They deny criminal activity.
Yeah, and when I say sedate, I mean they get together and they cruise more in the style that like an American bike gang would do. They're not
right.
necessarily out to cause mayhem and destruction everywhere.
Yeah, for them it's more about, I think, the fellowship and the vehicles.
Exactly right. And this is another kind of strange twist on this whole thing. Is that some of the girlfriends of the male Bosoosoku members, you know, that had been with these guys earlier in their lives, you know, the same guys that are now in the alumni group, they come back and they're often riders themselves. So they decided, well, I'll give this a try this time around, see what it's like.
Yeah, this is interesting. I like the equality aspect of it, but this also means that this is tied to the fall of that traditional, or the, I guess I should say, the preceding Bosoosoku culture.
Well, that's true. That's true. So they see it in different ways. You know, some of these Bosoosoku guys, the ones that are current right now, the guys that are in the group.
Yeah.
Some of them accept this change. You know, they say that, you know, that's fine. You know, females want to come out and ride with this as well. That's okay. Others are more regimented in the old ways, in the way that it was, you know, for the prior 60 years.
Right. Yes. And of these traditional values, the sacrosanct, the most important one, is the vehicle you have, mm-hmm. which is why, you know, these scooters are still around, but they have to be heavily, heavily customized, modified. I've seen some impressive stuff that we talked about. But you can also see, some customization that you might associate with scooters on the bikes, mm-hmm. like Vespa and Lambretta, the kind of stuff that was very 1950s, 1960s England. You can see on some of the, you know, they've modded a Suzuki with some of these same things. Now it still has, you know, what we talked about earlier, the oversized fairings, the chopper style handlebars, and the, I think it's fair to say, extraordinarily lengthened exhaust pipes. Going to say ridiculous.
Well, but. Yeah, that's one key feature on these things is that they have these crazy exhaust pipes on mm-hmm. these, on the bikes. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned this now because I was thinking that we could transition into cars, if that's okay with you.
I would love it, yes.
Because now some of these groups are, you know, of course, it's not the bike gang involvement. Some of them are, some of them aren't. So, you know, some of the people that enjoy what they call the Bosso style.
Uh-huh.
So without the gang, involvement. So not the Zuku part, but just the Bosso style. But they still call it Bosso Zuku when you look at the cars. It's very confusing. You have to kind of get the lay of the land when you start reading about these things.
Right. But, yeah. There are different categories.
Yeah. But they've taken a lot of the ideas from the bike style and transitioned them to the cars. And there's other groups of cars as well. So there's several different styles of cars that are similar to Bosso Zuku or that can be included in Bosso Zuku that I'm going to get to. I'll list them, you know, one at a time. There's maybe five here that I can mention from an interesting site. But, one thing that we need to kind of get out of the way is that, you know, we talked about the cost of the bikes and the gear, you know, all the accessories that you have to buy and the embroidering and mm-hmm. the clothing and all that stuff, right? Well, think about that, you know, the cost of a tuned sports car or a tuned sedan. And for a while, you know, for up until about the mid 2000s, there was this incredible car culture going on in Japan where, you know, the youth were able to afford the cars that were being produced that were, you know, they would heavily modify them, but they were able to afford a new car and they could then throw all kinds of modifications on them to make it their own, you know, just like they do here in the States, like they do everywhere in the world, really.
Mm-hmm.
But they had their own individual style. And they've kind of gotten away from that recently, and they had to go back to some of the older cars.
Sure.
And the older cars are the ones that we find being modified for the Bosso Zuku style, not the brand new cars. That's not typically the ones we see.
No.
And it's because of the cost of these tuned sports cars. It's gone right through the roof.
And there's a bit of a positive feedback loop there, because if all the cool guys have that kind of car, like if all the cool guys are, for instance, driving the Nissan KDR30 Tomica Skyline, mm-hmm. which is, I think, one of the most popular, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're all driving that, then of course that's the one you want. And that thing is a monster on the road.
Sure. Yeah. But they've also, there's another little asterisk, I guess, that we need to add here is that there are some people that are driving new cars, but the difference is that they're now, these green cars, they're hybrids, they're EVs,
or the
K car series. And these are small vehicles like microvans and small pickup trucks. They call them the K class vehicles. I think there's even trucks that are in this K class.
Uh-huh.
And very, very small. So look them up. It's spelled KEI cars. And other examples, I guess, you know, that some of them might drive out there mm-hmm. are the Honda CRZ, the Mazda 6 cars, you know, the smart cars, maybe even Suzuki Wagon R, I think, is a big one right now.
Yeah. That surprised
me. What's really interesting about these K cars, the K car class, is that you find that even right from the manufacturer, they have a lot of the bells and whistles.
Right.
And the reason for this is that, you know, the regulations that Japan has put in place, they fit into the categories that they require for physical size and engine displacement mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So manufacturers add these new technologies to make them appealing to young drivers. And they've got things like forced induction engines. They've got automatic and CVT transmissions. They've got front wheel drive, rear wheel drive, all wheel drive. They've got, you know, incredible sound systems. They've got GPS. They've got all kinds of really cool features right from the factory that, you know, the kids love that stuff and they can just build on that and modify them to make them their own. So there's that angle going on. Mm-hmm. But then if you go back to the older cars, the ones that we talked about, you know, how they've modified them to kind of match the Bosuzuku bike style.
Ah, yes.
Or similar to the bike style. There's like five different groups that were kind of clearly laid out here in this, the Bosuzuku style.com article. It was just called What is Bosuzuku? And it describes what's going on.
That's great. Yeah.
But it tells you the different styles, with the different names. And I'll try the names out as we go, but I can briefly.
I'll walk through them with you.
I can briefly tell you what they're about. Just real quickly. Mm-hmm. We'll go through them. Shakotan.
Ah, this means low car.
And the main way to distinguish that low car is that it's, as you said, it's low, but it also has big wings and big exhaust tips, and it's typically an older vehicle. It's not brand new.
Yeah. This style, reached a height of popularity with, a manga called, Shakotan Boogie, which showed these two brothers driving these super, super low cars.
Yeah, and I like the style. I think it's a very clean-looking, older vehicle style. I think it's really cool, but it's still modified. The next one is Yankee style, spelled with a Y. Now, this is funny. It's Yankee, like Y-A-N-K-Y style.
Uh-huh.
And this one, the way to describe this is, during the 1970s and 80s in the Osaka area, the street fashion became to wear colorful Aloha shirts and pants. And this caused the wearers being called Yankees.
Uh-huh.
So most of the bad boys were wearing the Aloha fashion, and hence the Bosuzuku style became equivalent to the Yankee style at the time. So this is kind of like one adaptation of the Bosuzuku style. And the car that they're showing here looks like a Datsun, and it's painted in yellow and orange and white. It's very bright, but it's very cool looking. It's got, Ben, I think as we go through this, I don't think we've been shy about talking about this at all, but I think we both really like wide body kits on cars.
Are you kidding?
You know,
yeah.
The huge fender flares and tires and everything, but it's all tucked underneath the body when you have those wide kits, right? And that's exactly what most of these cars have. They have these giant wide body flare kits on them. They look so cool. And this Datsun looks really nice.
Now, what do you think about the next one up, the VIP style?
I don't know. This is a weird one. This seems like, Well, I'll just describe it maybe and let our listeners decide. But it's kind of a crossover between the first one we talked about, the Shakotan, and gang cars. Now, we're talking about lowered luxury cars.
Yeah, these are expensive, and they also tend to be newer.
Yeah, newer. They ride on big rims is what, you know, one of the features that stands out of them. And it's kind of like a, I don't know, it's like the higher budget Bosuzuku style, maybe?
Right? You might have graduated to Yakuza.
Yeah, maybe. This VIP thing is kind of strange. It's older cars from the '70s and into the early '90s. So it's the older, great big luxury vehicles that are being modified. And it's, I don't know how better to describe it. I mean, I've seen some interesting examples of these cars. I know they do look cool, but I don't know if it's for me.
Yeah, because you're not a mobster.
Well, maybe that's it. I don't know. There's okay. Then maybe the last two here we should just skip through.
Wait, you're not really a mobster though.
No, right? I'm really not.
Okay.
No.
All right.
You?
I mean, let's go to the next one. Kusha style.
Kusha style.
Kusha style.
I think it's Kusha. I think you're right. Now this means Japanese old classic car, which is kind of like the Shakotan that we talked about a little bit. It's an old car that's modified with fender flares and usually lowered, has pretty nice rims on it. Again, another type of Bosuzuku style. This one, I love this type of car. I mean, it, just like the Shakotan style, the older car, very clean look, very simple. It's not necessarily like a stance car, you know, in that there's a lot of camber or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I like. I like, you know, the fender flares that cover the wheels, but they're really wide, and the car is kind of squatted down. Very clean look, very shiny, has, you know, some add-ons that weren't necessarily, you know, offered back in the 1970s, but they're there now.
Right, yeah. I think that's a pretty good summation. Now, of course, listeners, ladies and gentlemen, this is the part of the show, which we probably should have said this already, Scott, where we tell you to go Google some of these, just a few of these styles, and check them out. If you like Decatur trucks, you're going to love this.
It's pretty interesting stuff. I mean, in the styles, I mean, you can clearly see the difference in the styles, and I don't know if I could pick them out if they were in a parking lot. But when they show them to me and they have one example and they say, this is an example of the Kusha style, I get that. I can see what they're getting at, because that is, that's dramatically different from the Yankee style.
Right. When you can compare and contrast.
Yes. Exactly.
Now,
right.
This is something And I feel like we're getting to the close here. This is one of my favorite things I really want to ask you.
Okay.
Do you think that this style will continue even if Bosuzoku culture disappears?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that enough people will pick this up, even if it's the group that's accepting this right now or that's doing this right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is the 16 to 20 year olds. I think these are the people that are older, that can afford the car, that can drive the car, that can afford the modifications, they can afford to get a new paint job however they want. They can make it the style that they want, and mm-hmm. I think that these will hang on for a long time. These are the kind of cars that fathers pass on to their sons or daughters. And they continue to take them to shows. These are really interesting cars.
Yeah. And I would like to see, I don't know, I'd like to see more of these in the States. And one thing we didn't mention is like the DNA of this in so many ways purposefully echoes Group 5 special production cars.
Oh, yeah. This one right here, this particular example, this, is it Grachan?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's how you say
Grachan.
It. Grachan. Mm-hmm. And, this is really interesting. This almost has the look of, the one that they're showing here almost has the look of an American muscle car. Now these have these giant body kits like we've talked about on some of the other styles, but these are even bigger. These are more exaggerated. And they have huge wings, which, as we said, resemble these Group 5 cars, so that the special production cars. And these were around in the 1970s. I think the special production cars from Group 5 were built from 1976 to about 1982. And if you don't know what those look like, go ahead and take a look. But then imagine a body kit like that, like you see on the racetrack,
yeah,
put on a street car,
mm-hmm.
and well done in many cases. I mean, most of these look really, really nice. Now, they don't have the horsepower to back them up like the special production cars from Group 5 do, obviously.
No, they don't.
I would think that maybe most of them don't. Maybe there's one or two out there that really do. But for the most part, you know, these are put on a lesser car to make them have that style. And it's, again, it's well done. I mean, the bodywork is well done.
Right. So stylistically, they do have the resemblance. But when it comes to the function, to the acceleration, the maneuverability, stuff like that, you're generally not going to see a Bosuzoku that does the same thing. As a matter of fact, I believe the journalist at Jalopnik said this was an example of form over function.
Yes, but you know what? I understand what he's saying, but you know what? That looks so good parked in your driveway, doesn't it?
Yeah, nonetheless, it's all about what you want out
of your
car.
Spend hours in the garage staring at that car if it had a look like that. It's pretty amazing. They do look really cool. Now, the last one that we want to talk about here for the cars and, you know, to kind of wrap this whole thing up is the actual Bosuzoku style. And this is the most bizarre of all of them. Now, it combines, you know, the styling of the one that we just talked about, you know, the Group 5 cars, the fender flares from the Yankee style. And has the crazy exhaust from the motorcycles. And when I say crazy, I mean really crazy.
So we don't mean slightly larger than normal.
No, I mean yellow exhaust pipes that are, you know, 12 feet long, coming out from under the hood and going over the, you know, the cockpit area of the car
to the
back
of
the vehicle. Yeah,
yeah.
Or flared out from the back, you know, with 12 pipes that look like peacock feathers.
That's a really
stretched
good way to
out.
Put it,
I mean,
yeah.
That's maybe the only way to put it, really. I mean, it does look like a peacock, some of them. And then, you know, others that, you know, come out the sides, but there's 8 or 10 pipes, and they're painted, you know, they're painted pink, they're painted yellow, they're painted red. Very strange, but these pipes, a lot of them obstruct the driver's view. These cars have giant wings on the front. Like, you remember when we talked about Decatur trucks and we mentioned that it's almost like, the back end of a, like a big yacht or something like that.
Yeah,
like a swim platform.
Right, because of the way it juts out.
The front of these cars look like a swim platform from a yacht. And then the back end has, you know, giant wings again and the body kits. And it's so strange to see these cars. And there's no end to the variation of them.
Yes, I think that is a very good point. That's a point that sort of wraps us up here for today, because I believe that these vehicles, this style of vehicle, will continue. It's just it's too common. There's real craft to making these. Mm-hmm. And as long as people, even just car tuners who don't care about the history, which I think is a mistake, or particularly care for the culture, even just car tuners will keep this alive, because it's got to be so much fun to make one of these.
So we can say then, I think we can say that we agree that the actions of the Bosuzoku gangs are probably going to go by the wayside. Those are going to go, that type of behavior on the streets is going to go away. However, the vehicles will remain because people have a love for that style.
Yeah, I agree with that. And listeners, we hope you agree too. As always, we hope you would have as much fun listening to this as we have making it. And we appreciate in advance your patience with our non-Japanese speaking attempts to pronounce Japanese words.
Yeah, pronunciations are difficult for us, have been ever since the very beginning. But boy, these are difficult. There's even more than this. I'll tell you, Ben, I'm skipping over some things because I don't want to pronounce it. So there's more information. Maybe a part two.
Hey, we're a car show, not a pronunciation guide.
Or an update. Maybe we'll do an update in future years, you know, of where this culture stands. Like, has it completely gone away?
Or if you speak Japanese, feel free to send us a pronunciation guide.
Oh, boy. We're asking for trouble.
Are we asking for trouble?
That's a paddling.
All right. So we're going to head out, and we look forward to hearing from you. If you want to find us, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you say, no, wait, I need another episode of Car Stuff right now, you are in luck. You can go to carstuffshow.com, check out every podcast we've ever done, and hey, if you have a suggestion for something we should cover in the future, drop us a line. We are
CarStuff at HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.